Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the business stories when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property? That public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by governmental agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Then go to our archives page. All right, we've been talking about this thing of private business, and there's a lot of neat stories about private business that we can all learn from. There's other people out there, you know, that do business that I've run into over the years. And as I meet these people and I do business with them, sometimes I learn neat little stories from their experiences in life. You know, they'll tell me, well, here's what I did and here's how I did that. And then I tuck that one away in my heart. And then I learned from another guy, and then I tuck that one away in my heart, and so on down the line. I got to tell you a cute little story here that occurred some years back. A fellow by the name of Dennis Lee. Some of you probably know that name, Dennis Lee. He's a con man from the word go, and he's been selling energy machines. Well, that's what he used to do. He went to prison a time or two or three for doing this, and I don't know where he's at now, in jail or out of jail, but there's an important lesson to learn from this, and that is investing is gambling for profit. You know, they're telling you that you should be investing your money in the stock market, in your 401ks, and your Krog plans, and one thing and another. Okay, I hear the arguments, and I've been listening to this, and you've got your money tied up. Let me try this. If you've got $100,000 in your IRA, it's locked in, and the government's already zeroed in. They've got their eyeballs on that, and what they're going to do is seize that shortly and then give you an annuity for it. Won't that just be special? That'll be almost as good as socialized medicine. But in the meanwhile, you don't have your money. But you've invested it. So, you know, you got people out here investing their money. Investing is gambling for profit. Business doesn't have anything to do with gambling. I'm not a gambler. I'm a businessman. And when I invest money in my business. I don't give people my money to invest in their business. I take my money and invest it in my business where I keep control of the investment. You see, when you put your money into your IRA, you don't have any control over the investment. That's being controlled by somebody else. Now, when you are controlling my money, you're not going to be near as careful with my money as you would be with your money. I'm real careful with mine. Now, I used to invest my money in other people's businesses, and I noticed that I was never satisfied with the way they invested my money. I was never happy with the returns that I got off of it. Now that I only invest in my own business, I'm 100% satisfied with my investments, and I'm 100% satisfied with the return, and if I'm not, hell, I'm the proximate cause of my own injury, then, aren't I? Well, here's a little story for you. I'm down in Pasadena, California, and this guy, Dennis Lee, happens to blow into town. I'm there on other business, but while I was there, I was encouraged by some of my students to attend one of these Dennis Lee seminars. And I said, well, you know, maybe the guy's got something to say, so let me go listen. So I went in and listened, and he had a story to tell. And it was a wonderful story. God, I loved it. I loved it. It was a story about how to get free energy. It was a story about how this guy down in, I don't know, Mississippi or someplace had invented a machine. I don't know that he called it a perpetual motion machine, but it was a free energy machine. And this thing, I don't know how it worked. You know, I'm not an electronics expert. I'm not an electrician. And I don't know. I don't know much. I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer. But I heard rumors that some guy had invented a machine and that it produced electricity. And you put nothing in and you get a whole bunch out. And I thought, well, that's just exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something for nothing. I'm looking to put nothing in and get a bunch out. That's the kind of investment that I want. And the more I listened to this guy Lee, the better I liked his story. I mean, this guy had a hell of a story. But the story violates certain principles of business. There's just some things, you know, in life, like you can't get more out than you put in. And when somebody tells me I can get more out than I put in, I say, but, that does not comport with reality. Doesn't comport with the real world. It's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to do. But that isn't where reality is located. And so I was kind of on my guard right from that point on. And then when he got through with his story, that everybody was just ready to line up, that just wanted to invest. And he said, well, what we need you to do is to invest $17,000. See, what we're going to do is we're going to build this factory and we're going to turn out these machines. And those of you that get in on the ground floor today with $17,000, you can invest in this machine. Now, these machines are going to sell for $40,000, but you can get it for $17,000 if you buy today. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, folks. Don't be the last person on your block to miss out on these once-in-a-lifetime values. Never before and never again, values like these. Everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or profit. Hell, you know, I've been involved, you know, in the hype and the come on, you know, for years and years. I'm a salesman. Hell, I've heard this story before. And the guy, you know, he came over to me and he said, now, Mr. Gordon, what'd you think of this? And I said, it's wonderful. I have never heard a story that was more appealing, more wonderful than the story that I just heard from Mr. Lee today. And he said, well, then I'm sure that you'll want to be in on the ground floor and buy one of these machines. And I said, I want to buy two. I don't want one. I need two of these machines. And for $17,000, I'm prepared to pay cash, for these two $17,000 machines, because it's going to save me $13,000 each. That's one come on. I really like that. But more importantly, these machines are going to help me cut off from the power company. And this $2,500 a year that I'm paying now for my power bill over here, with this $17,000 machine, it's going to amortize itself out in, you know, less than 10 years. And so I said, where do I sign? So he pulled out his papers, and then he said, here, you know, fill this out and sign here and get your checkbook out. And I said, oh, no, I don't deal in checks. I deal in gold coin. I said, I'm going to do better than pay you $17,000. I'm going to pay you $17,000, and I'm going to pay it in gold coin. Oh, my God, the salesman just, he was almost ready to wet his pants. Man, you ain't heard a salesman, I mean, you haven't seen a salesman until you can see he's got his sale closed, and the guy is telling you, here's how I'm going to deliver the money to you. And so I said, but I don't need to fill out this contract here. See, I really don't care much for these contracts. What I care for is performance. Now, here's what I'm going to propose to you. I want you to load up two of these machines as soon as you get them built. And I want you to deliver the first one here to Number 1 Farmhouse Road. Get this, write it down. Number 1 Farmhouse Road. This is where these are going. And then I want you to come in there, and I want you to hook that thing up, and I want you to start it. And then I want you to pull the plug on the power company, and I want to see that machine work. And by God, if that machine works, I'm going to pay you the $17,000 in gold coin. Take it right there. And he said, but Mr. Gordon, we don't have any of these machines yet. You see, the reason that we need the $17,000 now is so that we can build the factory to build the machines. I said, oh. Well, if you don't have any of these machines, then it's pretty obvious you don't have any inventory to sell, do you? Well, no, we don't yet. But as soon as we get the money together, we're going to have the factory, and then we're going to be turning out these machines. I said, have you got any of these machines now? Well, no, we don't have a machine right now. I mean, if you ever built a machine and tested this? Well, no, we haven't got one of those yet, but we're going to build our first prototype machine just as soon as we get the money together, and that's why we need the investment capital now. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see if I understand this. You don't have one of these machines, and you've never built one of these machines, so you really don't know if this thing works, do you? Oh, we know it works, because we've got the plans, and we've got all the designs, and we've got blah, 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 blah over here. I said, well, that's all well and good, but I don't want to buy plans and designs. I want to buy a finished machine that makes electricity. I'm not in the market for plans and designs and blue sky. I'm in the market for a machine that makes electricity. Now, the power company that I'm hooked up with, they deliver to me electricity, and that's what I'm paying for every month. Now, as soon as you can deliver me a machine that will deliver my electricity for less money than the power company can, I want to buy it, and I'm willing to pay gold. So here's my offer. Stands to this day. If you're listening out there, Dennis Lee, it stands to this day. You deliver the machine to Number 1 Farmhouse Road. You hook it up, plug it in, and if it works, I will pay you in gold coin for the machine. Now, that was about, I don't know, 20 years ago? Maybe more, I forgot now exactly. Now, here's what happened. In the 20 years since that offer was made, I have not seen any of those salesmen deliver a machine to Number 1 Farmhouse Road. I'm still waiting for my machine. But I am waiting for that machine with my $17,000 in gold coin. The people who invested the $17,000 in the plans and prototypes and the new factory and all the rest, they don't have their new machine either. They're still waiting. But they don't have their $17,000. So I got to ask you, would you rather wait 20 years for your machine with your 17,000, or would you rather wait for 20 years without your 17,000? I mean, the choice is yours. That's why I said, you know, investing is gambling for profit. Now, had this investment paid off, they would have invested $17,000, and they would have gotten their machine, and they would be living their lives happily ever after. And they would have made a profit. I don't know how much, but they would have made some profit, I guess. That was their intention when they invested. But the problem with this is that they are investing their money in somebody else's business. And that somebody else, in this case Dennis Lee, has control of their money. So once Mr. Lee got control of their $17,000, he didn't manage their $17,000 the way they would have liked to have seen it managed. These people that invested the money could see the money being invested in plant, equipment, machines, and delivery, and trucks, transporting the machines. That's what they saw. Dennis Lee saw $17,000 investments, and he could see mint juleps and the Riviera. And he spent the money on mint juleps and the Riviera, and he had a good time spending other people's money. And he didn't invest it the way they wanted it invested, but he invested it in the way that he wanted to invest it. You know, mint juleps and Riviera holidays. I don't want to finance other people's mint juleps. I want to finance my own mint juleps. In fact, I prefer Jack Daniels on the rocks, if you want my druthers. All right, so investing is gambling for profit, and control of the investment is everything. The guy that controls the investment. You ever heard the old story, you know? He who has the gold makes the rules. Well, once you turn your gold over to the other guy, he now has the gold and he makes the rules. And once you give your investment to Dennis Lee, he now has the gold. Dennis Lee now makes the rules. I didn't like that game at all. I like the game where little Georgie Gordon makes the rules. That's the game I like. Never did like the game that Ronnie Mitchell makes the rules. Remember Ronnie Mitchell? Remember Ronnie? He's the guy that had the sandbox when we were 5 years old, maybe four. And when you went over to Ronnie Mitchell's to play in his sandbox, God, I got to tell you, that sandbox was the neatest sandbox I've ever seen in my life. I've never had a sandbox. I'm 70 years old. I have never had a sandbox to play in. Went over to Ronnie Mitchell's, and I had some pretty neat toys, and he said, if you want to play in my sandbox, you got to let me play with your toys. He's got these broken pieces of trash, and I'm going to play with his broken pieces of trash in his sandbox. Well, you know, he who has the sandbox makes the rules. Yeah, I learned that when I was, hell, I wasn't even in kindergarten yet. I figured that out. So this thing of letting somebody else control your investment, I think maybe you ought to think that one over a couple times. That isn't the smartest game to play. It's not the only game in town, and it isn't the smartest game to play. Hey, let me tell you a little story here about the Husky Station guy. I used to drive truck, and I'm an old timey truck driver. And I pulled into the Husky Station there, you know, on the west end of Rock Springs, Wyoming. Tain't there no more, but used to be back in the late 70s. And I fueled up, and I was in a hurry. So I ran in and sat down at the counter, couldn't get a bite to eat. Get back on the truck. I'd make Salt Lake City, you know, before the end of the day. So I'm in there, and I'm sitting down at the table, or at the counter, sitting at the counter. And this guy comes in, he sits down next to me. I guess he's in a hurry too, and he's some kind of a guy. He's wearing a red and black plaid wool coat. This is January, colder than a witch's tit. January. And so I struck up a conversation with him. I said, "Hi, Bob, where are you from?" And you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, "Well, I'm from Montana." "Oh, what are you doing down here?" "I'm trading." "What do you do for a living?" "I'm a trader." "Trader? Now, you know, guy says, well, I'm a truck driver. Guy says, well, I'm a salesman. Well, I'm this, that, or something else." Now, a guy says that he's a trader. That's kind of unusual. I said, "Geez, what do you trade?" He says, "I trade anything." And, you know, we're talking about the trades and one thing and another and the trading, and that was kind of intriguing. You know, I wasn't a trader. I was a salesman. I'm out selling furniture and beds and stuff like that. And here's a guy that's a trader. And I said, well, what's trading? And he reached in his pocket. he pulls out a fistful of Krugerrands and drops them down there on the counter. I mean, it stirred up a lot of excitement and intent. And the waitress, you know, she stops. She's googly-eyed, and the guy in the kitchen looks through the hole, you know, where he's setting all this food up, you know, these plates, and he's looking through there, and he sees this pile of gold, you know, on the counter. And I got to tell you, boys and girls, I was pretty impressed. I don't know how many was there. I'm just going to guess 20. It looked like about a tube, you know, looking back on it. Now, I didn't know what a tube was when I was looking at this. These are Krugerrands. This is in the late 70s, early 80s. We didn't have any American money floating around. You know, we had the old $20 double eagles, but we didn't have any of the new eagles. They didn't come around till 86. But these are Krugerrands, and he had a fistful of them there. I'm going to guess about 20. Now, at the time, they were about $500 a piece. You know, this is 78, 79, 80 along in there. We hadn't peaked out at 850 yet, but, you know, they were pretty pricey, and you didn't have to know much about gold to see that this guy had a bunch of money sitting here on the counter. I'm going to guess he had about $10,000 sitting on the counter. And as he's picking these up and stacking them up and sticking them back in his pocket, I guess he's going to bedazzle me and see if he could sell me a couple, three gold coins. I'm not sure I had enough money for lunch, much less a couple of gold coins, but I was pretty impressed, all right. And so, as he put those away, I didn't know what else to say, so I said, aren't you afraid that somebody's going to knock you over the head and take those away from you? You know, normal people run around with credit cards in their pockets. They don't run around with $100 bills and gold coins for fear that they'll get robbed. That's why I had my money in the bank. See, at the time I was legally incompetent, mentally unstable, unable to manage my legal affairs or my financial affairs, and so I had bank accounts. And my bank accounts, see, I had to have a banker over there to take care of my money because I had too much and couldn't handle it myself. So I didn't have enough money, you know, to buy any of those gold coins because my banker had it all. Well, anyway, he turned to me on these stools. You know, they swivel. I imagine they'd swivel 360 degrees, but he swiveled that stool toward me 90 degrees and opened his left side, you know, the left side of his coat. He just opened it up. And under his armpit was a 45, looked like a 1911 Colt 45 to me. He didn't pull it out and show me his gun, but I'm looking at this guy's armpit as he says to me, nope. Closed his coat, turned back toward the counter. Now, here's a guy, a total stranger. He's got $10,000 in his coat pocket. He's got a gun under his armpit. He's a trader. Listen, I'm a businessman. I have 30 employees. I produce $1 million a year. I've got a letter of credit for 30 grand in my jockey box out here. You know, I'm one of Tricky Dick's silent majority, and I'm paying $200,000 a year in taxes. Well, not quite, but pushing $200,000 a year in taxes. And I can't put $10,000 in gold coin. Hell, I couldn't put $10,000 in $100 bills on the counter. So I learned a valuable lesson that day, and I said to myself, I drove out of there, and I'm driving down the road, you know, and you don't forget little things. Hell, that was 20 years ago, and I ain't forgot it yet. I mean, that was damn impressive, I got to tell you. When you see something like that in your life, it makes an impression upon you, and you'll never forget that if you live to be 110. I'll never forget that guy again. I got to thinking about, gee, I wonder how much tax that guy pays. I wonder how much his Social Security is on those. How do you pay your Social Security with Krugerrands? How do you pay your income tax with gold coin? You ever think about things like that? Well, I didn't have any problem paying my income tax. They take checks, you know, You just write them out a check and send it to them, and they're happy. Now, there's another little story here I want to tell you about, and it has to do with a guy at Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo. And we're going to call him Jose. You know Jose? They're in Guantanamo Bay. And he's working here and doing his thing, and he comes in and out. Now, he's a Cuban, and he comes in and out the gate, and he has to be searched every day. I imagine that this is pretty humiliating, but every day he comes through the gate, and he has to be frisked. It's kind of like getting on an airplane, you know. You got to be searched. I don't know if he had to take his pants down so they could look up his crack or not, but he's getting searched every day. And about once a week, this guy Jose would come through the gate with a wheelbarrow, and in the wheelbarrow it was full of straw and bricks and broken bottles and just trash. But he'd come through with this wheelbarrow and he'd go through the search. Now, these Marine guards, you know, they're not dummies. They know that these Cubans are thieves. They know they're stealing drill bits and hacksaw blades and all kinds of stuff, you know, machine tools and router bits and stuff. And so they take this wheelbarrow, and they know that this guy's stealing something. So they take the handle grips off, and they look down the handlebars, and they take the wheel off, and they look inside the tire, and they can't ever find anything. And they search Jose, can't find anything on him. They search his wheelbarrow, can't find anything in the wheelbarrow. This goes on for about 20 years. No, every week, old Jose comes out of here with his wheelbarrow full of all this trash and garbage. The Marine guard says, "Hey, dump that on the ground." And they kick through it, and they look at all the bricks, and they study it, and they analyze it, and I can't find jack squat. This goes on for a long time, 20 years. So pretty soon, old Jose retires, and he goes down to the Havana Hotel, and he's sipping on margaritas. And one day, the Marine guard comes in, and he sits down next to Jose, says, "Hey, Jose, let me buy you a drink." So he buys him a drink, and he says, "Now listen, you've been coming in and out of the base. You've been working there for 20 years. And," he said, "you've been stealing for 20 years. And we can't figure out, we were never able to figure out what the hell you were stealing. And so, you know, now that you're retired and you've pulled it off and, you know, got the perfect crime cooked here and so on. So now it's time for you to tell us, Jose, what was it that you were stealing and we couldn't catch?" He paused for a little effect, sipped on his drink, and he leans over to this Marine guard and he says, "Wheelbarrows." Now, there's something to be said about that. And there's a little story here that I want to relate to you so that you can kind of better understand how this guy is stealing wheelbarrows. You know, and they're, if he's stealing wheelbarrows, you know they're right out in the open. But you got to get people's minds off on something else. Now, a con man doesn't. Con man doesn't. He gets your mind off on lust and greed, like Dennis Lee. If he can get your mind out here on lust and greed, get you imagining all these profits that you're going to make, all this vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear that you're going to wallow in and just really enjoy, then he can take your money away from you. He's got your mind off where it doesn't belong, and you're not paying attention to what's really happening here. And I had a business associate one time that was a con man, kind of like Jose here, not like Dennis Lee. Now this guy, I'm not going to mention his name because some of this isn't exactly legal, but I wanted to tell you what happened so that you could tuck it away in your heart, and then it'll be one of those experiences. Hey, I heard this guy tell me this story. And these stories, you know, when they lodge in your subconscious mind as time progresses along, it might come up someday, and it might be handy to you, and you might make a dollar or two. Now, meanwhile, before I tell you this story, let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we are sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and download that directly. Website's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page. And they tell me that if you're skilled and know how to use your computer, that you can download it right there off of the archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, these beliefs, these comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a business case that I came across, a business deal, a business story that I heard many years ago. And it has to do with a con man keeping your mind off of what it is that he's really doing. Now, in the case of politics here in the United States, our President Barack Obama is keeping our mind off of the real issues that we need to be focused on, and that is the impending collapse and national captivity of the United States of America. See, this country is in peril, and it's about to go into national captivity, and our Creator, the God, you know, of the universe, the Creator of the universe, he's got a bitch with us, and he's about to foreclose on us. And there's some heavy duty stuff coming. And to keep our minds off of that, we now have our minds on the oil spill in the Gulf. We've got our minds on socialized medicine. We've got our minds on Greece. I mean, we've got our minds on 40 things out here that don't have anything to do with reality. Now, these are real events. You know, Greece is bankrupt. But then, hell, every country in the world is bankrupt. So what in the hell is all this big focus on Greece all about? Huh? Furthermore, the United States is in worse financial condition than the Greeks. So why are we pointing our fingers at the Greeks? Because it keeps our minds off of the real issue here at home. Just like Jose keeps the Marine Guard's focus and vision on broken bottles, bricks, and trash in the wheelbarrow. It keeps his mind off of, well, what's this guy stealing? Well, he's stealing wheelbarrows. The wheelbarrow's right out in front of us. You know, reality is right here in front of us. But now, the con man has to get your mind focused on something else. Now, these politicians and the Illuminati and the powers that be, the Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, these guys are good. I mean, they're good. They have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. As Rosenthal made plain, he said, "We toy with the American public like a cat toys with a mouse." Anyway, he wasn't whistling Dixie. All right, so get your pen and paper out here. I'm going to show you a complex business deal here. It's hard to follow, not impossible, just hard, just difficult. But it's very common, and government officials know this. See, they know what's going on back here. They know that the businessmen of America are robbing the government blind. And it just really ticks them off. Oh, they don't like it. That's why there's this antagonism between public officials and private business. And it's because the private businessmen, they know they're getting ripped off by the government. And so they in turn around and they rip off the government. So you got two sets of thieves here. You got the government thief, and then you got the entrepreneurial thief. Now, both of these sides do not subscribe to, and they do not practice the Ten Commandment model, thou shalt not steal. So the government thief comes in first, and so then the business thief says, well, I've got to steal from the government thief because the government thief is stealing from me, and so I've got to mitigate his theft by stealing. And so, you know, it just goes back and forth and on, never comes to a conclusion here. So here's the way this theft works. This guy is running a business, and this business sells about $5 million a year. So we take $5 million here in sales. Okay, so we write that out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's see, 5, that's a comma, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. There we go, $5 million. So if we cut that in half, about $2,500,000 of that is cost of goods sold. So if we draw a line with our minus sign over here, that means that his adjusted gross profit is $2,500,000. Now, we've got to have expenses come out of that. And so, you know, you got to pay your light bills and labor and various expenses and one thing or another come out of that. And that's going to take off about another $1 million. Remember, it takes about one half for labor. Remember how this came? So we got 5 million in sales. Half of that then is profit. Half of that is cost of goods sold. So we're going to have about $1,250,000, which is going to be cost of goods sold, and about $1,250,000, which is going to be labor. Okay. Now, when we get down here on the bottom line, we got to file a tax return, and our tax return is going to reflect that we've got about $1,250,000 of net income, for which we're going to have to pay tax. And at that time, it was, you know, this is back in the 70s. This is before the tax was adjusted down. So they're going to gaff you here about 91% less whatever you can have as legitimate deductions. And so here comes the deduction game. You're trying to get all the deductions in here that you possibly can. This is why people in those days, and I guess they still do today, invested in apartment houses and oil wells and all kinds of crazy things, some of them good, some of them not so good, in order to bring that down. Now, this guy invested in all kinds of things. He had some motels, and he had some apartment houses, and he had this, that, and another thing, and, you know. And so he would file his tax return, and he would say in his tax return, here's how much I've got, and here's how much I've got invested, and here's my schedules and all the rest of it. But he would deliberately take about, you know, $50,000-$60,000 worth of deductions that he was absolutely not entitled to. So he pads his tax return by about $60,000. We'll pick a number. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. We just pick a number here, $60,000. He's gonna pad it. Now, when you get caught doing this, they're going to gaff you 60% penalty and 10% interest. Now, if you did this on $100,000, they'd gaff you $60,000 penalty, and then 10% of the $160,000, which is $16,000. It shouldn't be calculated that way, but you know the IRS, they're going to calculate it in the way that's going to stick it to you and make the most for us. And that's because the IRS agent that's doing this gets 10% of this. And understand, to get more now, 15, 20%, they get a percentage of what they recover. These guys at the IRS, they must have been fighting over this guy's account every year. Because every year it's got the same thing. It's like this wheelbarrow coming through the gate. You know, every week the wheelbarrow comes through the gate. And so we don't know what this guy's stealing, but we know he's stealing something. So they catch this guy, and it's $100,000 one year, $60,000 the next, and so on. And so when it's all said and done, and we get all through with this program, he has to pay the tax, plus he's got to pay the penalty, plus he's got to pay the interest on it. So it costs him, you know, $100,000 a year extra. Now, you know, just your common sense would tell you, you know, about the first time you got dinged for $100,000, second time, third time, you know, even a slow learner ought to figure out, hey, wait a minute, we better be careful about these deductions that we're taking. But not this guy. No, he goes out there and he deliberately phonies up his tax return. He's got phony deductions he's not entitled to, and he gets caught. He gets caught every year. Now, what in the hell is this guy doing that for? Now, I knew this guy, and I said to myself, this guy's not dumb. This guy's not doing this for no good reason. It's kind of like looking at the Chinese, you know. They're sitting over there with $1 trillion worth of bad paper from the United States. Those guys aren't dumb. They know that paper's bad. They know they're not going to collect on it. And I just saw last month that they bought another $30-40 billion worth of this bad paper. So when I look at stuff like that, I say to myself, no, wait a minute, where's the wheelbarrow here? These chinks, they're not dumb. If you think that the Chinese now are backward, no, sirree, Bob, let me remind you, you people out there don't know of a single Chinese plumber, carpenter, or electrician. The Chinese do not do manual labor. They're all businessmen. I never met a Chinaman that couldn't count. And they're not taking $1 trillion worth of crummy American paper, and they're going to eat it. Rest assured that they're not going to eat it. Now, I got to tell you, as I speak, I do not know what the Chinese game plan is. But I'm here to tell you, whatever that game plan is, it's going to be real bad for us. When those guys drop the shoe, it ain't going to be good in Poughkeepsie. So, in looking back at Jose and the wheelbarrow, and looking back to my old buddy here and the IRS, I say to myself, aha, they got our minds off on oil spills, Greece, the euro, and we're not looking here at some very poignant problems. We'll talk about those poignant problems as we progress along. All right, now let me show you the numbers here again. Remember, he's selling $5 million a year. You can't hide all of that. I mean, you got all of these credit cards. When you're running a business like that, hell, you got credit cards, you've got employees, you got bookkeepers, you got a bunch of people that have access. You got bank accounts, you know. You've got paper trails everywhere here. So, you know, you got to file your tax return every year. You got to be on top of this, you know, and you got to be pretty accurate. You got to have accountants and people running around here. So, he said, of my business, we do about, out of $5 million a year, we do about $1 million in cash. Cash. $100 bills. And the rest of it is done in checks, credit cards, and consumer contracts. So, I skim $1 million a year in cash off, but I do it a little bit smarter than that. I don't take $1 million in cash. I take about $750,000. And I take that cash off, I put it in my pocket, and I deposit this other $250,000. And by doing that, they don't see that what I'm really selling over here is $5,750,000 a year, but I'm reporting $500,000, and they know that half of that is cost of goods sold. And so the numbers they're working off of aren't quite correct. But if they were to work backwards, they would be able to figure out what my real sales are based upon what my cost of goods sold is. So to keep them from working backwards off of the cost of goods sold to find out what the actual sales are, I deliberately phony up the tax return so that it focuses their mind on deductions rather than cost of goods sold. By concentrating their minds on the deductions, they don't work backwards off of cost of goods sold, but rather they accept the cost of goods sold. And then by accepting the cost of goods sold, then the correct total gross is $5 million instead of $575,000. So by paying this extra $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year every year, it keeps their minds off of the $750,000 that's really being stolen, which nets $650,000 with a clean bill of health every year because he's been audited every year, which destroys the criminal action and then brings it back to civil. I thought, you know, talk about one thief stealing from another. It's true that the IRS, they've got a pretty good way to steal. There's no two ways about that. And the income tax is a theft. No two ways about that. But it's a voluntary theft. See, everybody that participates in the income tax volunteered for it. Nobody stuck a gun in their head, you know, or at their head and said, hey, you got to do this or else. No, that isn't the way that's played. So, like the Guantanamo wheelbarrow story, control of the investment is everything. If you don't have control of the investment, then then you only get paid the crumbs that come off the table. You don't get the main course here. Now, investing in other people's businesses over here, even if you get paid your 5%, it's peanuts, number one. Number two, leaves you vulnerable. They can steal from you anytime they want. And this is the problem that you have when you keep your money in the bank. You've given up control of your investment. The banker's got it. When you invest in stocks and bonds, you've given up control of your investment. And now General Motors has got it, and stockbrokers, and Goldman Sachs has got it. When you put your money into an IRA, well, then somebody else has got it. So, in every case, you're investing in a gamble, and you always lose. Always lose. Now, they'll let you win some of the time up front. Now, I can remember when I was working at the Atlantis Company and in contracting, my banker was always interested in my balance sheet, and so every 6 months he'd have me fill out a new balance sheet. This is when the banker was my guardian. This is before I could count. And I needed the guardian. Hell, I couldn't count my own money. So I'd have his banker count it, and he kept telling me, stroking me. So he said, "Hey, this is really good, Gordon. You know, you had $100,000, then it grew to $125,000, $150,000, $175,000, $200,000, $225,000, $250,000. Pretty soon he says, "Hey, you got these buildings over here and these houses over here, and you got these trucks and pickups and all this tools and equipment. Hey, your business is growing. Everything is fine." And every time my business is growing and everything is fine, this guy is lending me more money and charging me interest. Now, my mind is on my balance sheet. You see, my mind is on my equitable interest. The banker, who is really a con man and taking me to the cleaners, he wants me to keep my mind off of the interest that I'm paying. If I ever get my mind on the interest that I'm paying, if I ever find out that this guy is raping me, robbing me, and pillaging me, and there is no profit in my business, I'm going to stop doing that. So at all costs, the banker has to keep my mind off of the rule of 72. And what happens to my capital that I've got in his bank? So he keeps telling me, "Oh my God, look at your balance sheet." This is old Bob Maurer now. You know, he used to be the manager of the Valley Bank. "Oh my God, look at what you're doing. Ooh, God, you make me jealous." That's what Bob told me. "You make me jealous." And while he's stroking me, he's got his hand in my back pocket cleaning me out. Now, you know, at some point in time, boys and girls, you know it's time for us to wake up and smell the coffee here and start putting the ballpoint pen, you know, to the paper over here and start counting and adding this up. As long as your mind is off on other things, this is why the Roman Empire disintegrated and collapsed. To keep people's minds off of what's really going on, they start staging these circuses. And so in America today, we've got these circuses staged. We call it the World Series and the Super Bowl. World Series and Super Bowl. Hell, they're doing the same thing to us here that they were doing to the Romans. Get your mind off of reality and onto something over here that doesn't amount to anything. So they drug us with television. You can sit in here and watch television. It's fun. Oh my God, Monk is just hilarious, ain't he? And you're watching The Great Race, and you know, and boy, you're just entertained until you just can't stand it anymore. If they entertain me anymore over there, I think I'd go crazy. But it keeps your mind off of the reality that the United States is so vulnerable that we've lost now about 90% of our manufacturing capacity. Let me just tell you a little part of the story here. Did you know that in 1960, 63% of the gross domestic product was manufacturing? Okay, this is 1960. Now, this is 50 years ago. 63% of every dollar we make comes from manufacturing. You know, things like steel mills, automobile production plants, and aluminum, and, you know, okay, manufacturing. 63%. You know what it is today? 9. Write that down. 9%. In 1960, there were 26 steel mills in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 1.1 million people lived there. Today, 300,000 people live there, and there are nada steel mills in Pittsburgh. Where are those steel mills? They're in China. You people sent your manufacturing capacity to China. They're in control of your investment. Americans, wake up. And the Chinese are sitting over there with $1 trillion worth of your bad paper. And I'm not quite sure I understand what they're going to do with that bad paper. I just know that whatever they're going to do is going to be all bad for us. Just because I don't know what their plan is doesn't mean that I'm dumb and can't figure out that they ain't got a plan. Those people aren't dumb. They ain't taking that paper for no good reason. Now, I notice that our Secretary of State every so often runs over to she stops off in Japan, too, but she runs over to China quite often. So, if you want to know who's got the gold, it's the Chinese. And if you want to know who's in control of the investment, it's the Chinese. And if you want to know who's calling the tune, it's the Chinese. And we, that is the Americans, our Secretary of State, our President, is going over there and he's kowtowing. She's kowtowing to the Chinese. They've got our steel mills. They've got our manufacturing. They've got our rubber made. They've got our Walmart. They control it all. And one of these days, they're going to cash in their chips. I don't know when. I'm just telling you, one of these days, those boys are going to cash in their chips. And you haven't got it to pay. Boy, that's going to be a rude awakening. Now, in the Bible, God talks about a siege. Siege. That's in the old days. They used to put an army around a city. They wouldn't let anything in. They wouldn't let anything out. I remember in World War II, they said, you know, we got to use these atomic bombs over here so that we can whip the Japanese. And it was a good plan, and it worked, and I don't deny that. But, you know, the Japanese were locked onto those islands, and they said, we're going to have to invade those islands, and then we're going to have to suffer 2 million casualties. Now, I'm not a military man, and I'm not here to tell you how to run a war, you know, you generals out there, but it would seem like to me that I could take a page out of the olden days, like Alexander the Great when he besieged Tyre. You know, with the military force that we had during 1945, I just got to thinking about that, and I said, what do you think would happen if we were to surround Japan with all those ships? We didn't let their fishing boats out to fish. We didn't let their ships in or out to bring in any raw materials. Don't you think those people would have starved to death? Don't you think those people would have been brought to their knees? And then we could punctuate that, you know, with firebombings every day. Just fly over their cities and firebomb them. And then just tell them, you know, take your time. No big hurry. When you guys get ready to quit, send us a message. Put up your white flag, and we'll come in, take over. Until then, we're going to bomb you every day, and you ain't going to move a ship in or a ship out, and you ain't going to get anything in and anything out until you quit. I don't think it would take any invasion at all, and I don't think it would take any casualties. Well, you know, that's another story for another day. But again, you know, he who controls the investment, you know, is the guy that's got the gold, and the guy that's got the gold makes the rules. And then we don't have the gold, and we don't make the rules. Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. We got to leave it right there, and let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.